the best moment of my life was in court when the guy says, the United States versus John Stagliano. John Stagliano, they mispronounced my name. The United States versus John Stagliano. I'm thinking, wow, I have achieved something in my life.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today I'm sitting with John Stagliano, who's the head of Evil Angel Productions, a pornography production and distribution company. We're talking to you right now because you're in D.C. for a very particular reason. Explain why you're here.
Well, the Justice Department has decided to bring an obscenity prosecution against me for selling two movies and also for having a trailer on my website, evilangel.com, that is theoretically available for minors to look at after they've jumped through some hoops and whatever. They could look at this particular trailer, and they're saying that that is obscene.
I should add before we go on that, John, you have contributed to Reason Foundation, the nonprofit that publishes
yes.
Reason Magazine, Reason Online, and Reason TV.
That's correct, and I was selling Reason on UCLA campus in 1972.
Yeah.
In the fall.
Did you sell many copies?
I sold a few. I sold about $40 or $50 worth, and I didn't actually pay Reason back until years later.
Well, I
needed the money.
In the meantime. What are the two titles that you are being charged with obscenity for?
The two movies are Milk Nymphos and Storm Squirters 2, Target Practice.
John, for somebody who is not who is either not interested in pornography or thinks that porn is offensive, can you, what would you say to them in terms of how what you're doing is really a case of free expression and why everybody who believes in freedom should really be interested in the outcome of your case being an acquittal?
The reason why I think this case is important is because it's another area where the government thinks they should be able to run our lives. And this is certainly an important area where it's art that we consume, it's recreation that we consume, and it's the principle that the government can come in and say, behave this way. And they could easily extend that from looking at porn to consuming fast foods to smoking cigarettes. Oh, they already did that. To all sorts of things. And anything that can develop a constituency for people to want other people to behave in that way is now open in this society where the majority can impose its standards and behavior patterns upon a minority. And that's a very bad precedent to set. And we've already set it in this country, and it's getting worse.
You are going to be mounting a defense. Today you were arraigned and you entered
yes.
a plea. What plea did you enter?
Not guilty.
Okay. And not guilty of obscenity, right?
That's correct.
And so everybody is clear. Obscenity is a type of expression which is not covered under the First Amendment. So the issue is really whether or not the court or a jury will define your films as obscene.
That's correct.
Okay. And the current guidelines for determining obscenity come out of a Supreme Court case from the early 70s, Miller, in which Justice Warren Burger, the Chief Justice at the time, came up with a three-part guideline. And he said, the basic guidelines for the trier of fact must be, first, whether the average person applying contemporary community standards would find that the work taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest. Second, whether the work depicts or describes in a patently offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by the applicable state law as obscene. And C, whether the work taken as a whole, again, lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. You are going to be arguing that your material is not, in fact, obscene. Is that
right? Well, there are several things that we're going to be arguing. One of the things is that in fact, this stuff is out there in the community, both the Milk Nymphos-type movies and the squirting-type movies are prevalent in adult video stores throughout the area here in
right.
Washington, D.C. This is not a conservative area for selling movies. It's also true, and we're thinking about doing an argument like this, is that DVD sales are going down rather rapidly right now, and people are consuming their pornography on the internet.
Right.
And on the internet, it's a vastly different world where there's lots of different things available, and the community standard of the internet is very different.
Right.
The other thing is, when this Miller case came down in 1973, pornography, if it was going to be shown anywhere, was going to be in a theater, which would be on a public street,
right,
in somebody's small town or in somebody's big city or whatever,
yeah,
where everybody could drive by the marquee and see that it's
right
there, and their children could see that it's there, and everything would be out in the open. The name of the movie would be on their marquee, and that's a way, way different world than what we have today, where people consume pornography in the privacy of their own homes,
yeah,
more and more so just on their computers, mm-hmm, and it's not in the public's face at all when it's there.
Right.
And this is a completely different world in the applicable law. The law does not apply now to today's world.
But then in the Miller case, there is the question of whether the work taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. Will you be challenging that?
How do you define art? I mean, art, I think, good art, hits you below the cerebral cortex, but like right there on the brain stem or whatever, and he says, oh, I like that, you know? And seeing a beautiful round ass is very artistic, and it hits people. It's like, whoa, that's like, you know, I like ass, but that's like a beautiful ass. So by definition, you've selected, mm-hmm, something really beautiful of that genre, and that's art. You do artistic selection. The real key here is, this is a way for the average guy alone at home to get off, mm-hmm, or girl. I've known a lot of girls that are into stuff like this, especially the squirting stuff, because mm-hmm, that focuses on female orgasm. And so it's a real prejudiced movie. I mean, you know, male orgasm's all over porno movies. Female orgasm is not. But
and
you know,
one of the movies was made by a woman, correct?
The trailer was made by Belladonna.
Okay.
And the thing is, pornography is the way for people with less money and less power to get off. If you've got lots of money, if you've got prestige, if you were a king or a nobleman a couple hundred years ago, or if today you're like a high-priced lawyer or a congressman or a senator
or a governor of New York,
you can afford call girls. You can get off. You can have your sexual desires satisfied. But if you're a normal working guy, you can't afford that. And this is what you get off on, and this is what your pleasure is, and that's what the government wants to suppress. And that, to me, is just rotten. It's just, you know, kick the mother, excuse me, the bastards out. But it's not going to happen because they're the ones who are controlling us.
You very much believe in privacy rights. You're very much, you don't want to flaunt things in people's faces.
Yeah, I'm not the kind of guy that does, I'm not a big exhibitionist at all. I think that, you know, some people don't like porno, mm-hmm, and it should not be in their faces. I've always been very uncomfortable with some people who make porno movies that want to say, oh, this is free speech, you know, and I'm out there and I'm just talking about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's not me. You know, I make my porno movies for the people that love porno. They're my fans. They're the people I make it for. Mm-hmm. For some other people that want to get more publicity and stuff, that's not interesting to me. I don't want porno to be in the face of people that don't want to see it.
In the late 80s, you developed the gonzo style that you became very heavily identified with, and this is it's really kind of the dominant mode of expression in porn now. Can you talk a little bit about what gonzo is and how you came up with it?
Well, in the 80s, everybody was, for two reasons, just imitating Hollywood movies. They would, you know, you would, that's all we knew how to do, and you would make a movie with bad actors and actresses that were hired just for their sex, and we'd shoot it on video, and it wouldn't look that great. And
but you would pretend that it was, you know, it's like Star Wars with actual sex scenes.
Yeah, but we usually didn't have the money to make it look like Star Wars. Maybe we'd make it look like a soap opera or something like that, you know, Days of Our Lives or something with people having sex at the end.
Right.
But and then maybe some of that had to do with the fact that people were worried that they had to make a feature because a feature was more easily defendable.
Okay, under Miller, it has a clear artistic shape, or you know, people can kind of understand that.
So, in fact, the first Buttman, I created this character called Buttman. It was the summer that Batman came out, and the first couple of Buttman movies were features. But they had two interesting different things about them. The first one was the idea was
they had a lot of butts in them, right?
They had a lot of butts in it. That was, well, probably the most interesting thing. But the more significant thing was the fact that the concept was that you now, I wanted to do this thing that somebody had suggested for an amateur movie where the camera, like, starts on its side, it gets turned on, and you see the picture on its side, gets turned up, set on a tripod, and these two couples come around from the side and say, we're the Smiths and these are the Joneses, and we're going to make a porno movie. But the significant thing is they're looking right into the camera. There's a recognition that there's a camera there. And that guy didn't understand what he was saying to me because I took it, well, let me combine it with my butt fetish, and I had done these hard features for my company, Evil Angel, which I had just started in 89 as a manufacturer, so I own my movies now. And I said, well, girls can look right into the camera and be sexy. That's what you used to see in some still pictures from porn. So I did that. I had girls look right into the camera and be sexy. And that just that change of angle, of looking at somebody else and now they're looking into the camera, has so much more impact. And plus, I had made 40 or 50 movies before that. So I knew how to work with the camera. And it's like, you know, zoom in quick and focus and whatever. I'm like talking with the camera. I'm looking at the girls. And I was good at camera work at that point in my career. And
so you broke the fourth wall.
Yeah. And that really was significant in that it became intimate. Porn became intimate. And as I did the first couple of Buttman movies, I realized that, okay, I just threw a couple of scenes in that like kind of related to the story, but then they kind of didn't, because you've got a girl who has certain talents, and then you've got guys that can do it. And rather than do like a regular porn movie where you try and shoot the whole thing in 2 days or even one day, which people were doing, like, well, let me just, because I got my camera and I got a small crew, I could shoot one scene in one day. Let me shoot the best scene I can with that girl. Let me do a little story in itself in one scene in the movie, and then it's got like five scenes, and it's five little stories. But they're like, girls are looking right into the camera and being sexy. And I did these little crazy tease stories where I'd get in trouble for peeking over somebody's fence or doing something or whatever, and I had ongoing characters and stuff in the first Buttman movies. But the unifying thing was my character relating to the girls in different ways, and that was imitated like crazy because it just worked. And it was a great way to shoot porno because you're directing while you're talking from behind the camera. And I did it, I think, better than some people because I had the skills, the technical skills of working with the camera at the time.
You are HIV positive. How did you contract that, and how is that intersecting? How is that intersecting with your professional career or any of your motivations in fighting this case?
Well, I had a thing, as most middle-aged men do, where I wanted to experiment with transsexuals. Not most, I don't know. Some middle-aged men do. And I was a little bit careless, and I got HIV. And the interesting thing was it put me in a situation where now I'm more like a normal consumer, where now I'm not getting laid by porn girls at all. Mm-hmm. Now my life becomes, I'm like this nerdy guy who doesn't get laid at all, and I got to look at porno to get off. So I was looking at porno to get off, and my taste expanded. And I realized, oh, there's all sorts of stuff that's really interesting out there that I didn't even know existed because I'm just worried about, you know, having sex with a girl. Now sex became more artistic to me. It became more interesting to me as a medium for expanding our horizons as human beings. And that was significant, and my life has turned out 10 times better, I think, than if I hadn't gotten HIV.
And you're a family man yourself.
Yes.
Right? You're married and you're a father.
I have a daughter.
You are taking care of your daughter.
Yes.
So, intellectually, you are a libertarian. How did you come to libertarian ideas?
I was just reading in high school and was very much impressed by Ayn Rand. Mm-hmm. And she had arguments and ideas that were different from the socialism that I was exposed to in the late 60s in high school. And it just made more sense to me. And I just started thinking about stuff, and my liberal leanings from high school changed.
What do you think Ayn Rand would say to you in your situation right now?
She might condemn porno. I don't know. She had some weird ideas toward the end, although she might like say Rocco Siffredi. Now he takes girls strong, and
right.
She really respects that. He's like
that.
Hank Reardon and Dominique in that scene there, and he really knew how to do that idea. And in a way, you know, she was very much into fetish sex.
And now, do you feel like you're turning into a modern day or real life Howard Rourke? Are you going to make a 40-page statement?
Unfortunately, my lawyers don't think I should talk directly to the jury. However, I've been very much motivated to tell them, you know, I think I should be opening and closing also because I can say these ideas better than they can.
Yeah.
And although they tend to disagree
and
with me.
You were facing how many years in jail? If everything goes
I don't know.
It's like 50 or 100?
No. It's like six counts of five and well, maybe 37 years or something. The trailer thing is only like a two-year thing.
Maximum
sentences,
yes,
by the way.
But I mean, conceivably, if everything goes against you, you could spend the rest of your life in jail.
Yes.
And so, given that, I mean, what's your quick summation to the jury? What's your argument that why you should not be prosecuted? Why what you're doing is not obscene? Why what you're doing should be, if not celebrated, tolerated in a free society?
Because. I didn't know I was breaking the law. The first thing is, we're a government of laws and not men.
Right.
If you don't have a law that's written that says that, okay, if you do this, you will go to jail, then that's a good law. Mm-hmm. If you have a law that says, well, we might say that this is obscene or we might say that's obscene, but we don't really know in advance, we're just going to maybe decide to prosecute you. That's the first number one bad thing about this situation, is that I didn't know I was breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
What law? Somebody's going to interpret that I was breaking the law? That's just really bad. That's the first number one thing. The second thing is, remember when we were young and people used to say every once in a while, it's a free country, isn't it? When was the last time you heard that? Do you want to live in the kind of country where the government can just say, I don't like you, I don't like your ideas and what you're doing, and let's just put you in jail?
And this is based on, you're the head of a multi-million-dollar corporation that is selling a product that people clearly want.
Yes.
Nobody is coerced into producing it or consuming it.
Yes, that's true. That's correct.
Do you think, you had mentioned that in terms of sexuality, that society seems to be getting better and improving. How do you feel about the prospects for freedom overall? Here you are in the dock. Conceivably facing effectively a life sentence. Do you feel like America, the United States, is becoming more of a free, more free or less free, or what's going on?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm an expert that can answer that question. I think that with the internet and with it certainly is the case that there are more people that are comfortable with pornography than ever before. Each new generation of people that come along, the kids that are competing the hell out of me and driving me out of business because they're new and they're young and they've got a lot of energy and they're better with computers than I am, and they have no moral qualms about porno, and it used to be it was rare that somebody like me would come along and be fairly intelligent and wanted to do porno movies and was pretty good at it and was willing to buck the system and say, I'm going to do it anyway. Now, you don't have to quite say, I'm going to do it anyway, because there's so many other people doing it. And they're smarter and they're better than me and they're all over the place. And that tells me that people are much more comfortable with it, so many more people. And with the internet, you have communication of injustices and things like that. So people can talk about these ideas of an exchange, this is a better society than that one, and that works better than that. So I believe that because of the so much greater communication of ideas, that the world is becoming a freer place in a lot of different ways.
I want to thank you, John, for stopping by Reason TV and talking to us today.
Thank you.